go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Right off the bat, my apologies for Friday. You know, I don't know what counts as family values on the right wing side of the spectrum, but I guess we were sort of living them on our side of the spectrum on Friday. I was sitting back here doing some pre-show and prep and stuff like that, and when I heard a bunch of hollering in the front yard. And then what's worse, crying. And that's when I ran out and saw my boy laying flat on his back in the front yard. He'd fallen about 15 feet out of a tree onto his back and was in no good shape. And that's when we called the ambulance. And so that's why I wasn't behind the microphone on Friday. I was trying to make sure that the boy was all right. He is. Mostly. As we say here in the hills, his back is badly stoved up. He's got an ugly bruise. And it was real painful for him for a couple of days. He's coming back around and walking around all right now. You know, it's interesting. One of the joys of parenthood is when you realize that, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, I looked at him and said, son, you know, you've been climbing that tree for a lot of years now, but, well, you're 6 feet tall and you're 190 pounds, and, well, maybe it's not such a good idea anymore. Tree's dead. Them limbs ain't going to hold you. But, well, some lessons have to be learned. How? Yeah, that's right, the hard way. I'm just glad he's okay. But we're back, and he's okay. And this is, what? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's the beginning of the week. Which means, of course, that it must, by definition, be Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. Step right up. Right here, behind this very thin veil of cybernetic canvas, you will find Morans. Morans of all description. Morans on the midway. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. For one thin nickel. That's right. One thin nickel gets you into Moran Monday on the horn. Remember, horn programming comes in at just less than a nickel an hour. For all the programming you receive at will. Moran Monday, there are freaks back here. There are disgusting creatures back here. There are shocking, shocking, revolting even, Morans behind this thin cybernetic veil of fabric. Remember, no one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Parents are encouraged not to allow little children to see the Morans. They'll see them aplenty once they become conscious voting adults. Moran Monday on the horn. Bring your popcorn, get your candy apple, your caramel apple. Have them roll them in peanuts if you want to. But hurry, hurry, hurry and step right up. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. That's right. It's Moran Monday on the horn. After a truly Moranic weekend, I should say. I mean, what else can you call the Democratic surrender tizzy orchestrated by the White House? And Harry Reid. My God, that man preemptively surrenders better than any, but really, just sad. And we've got some fun Moran nominees to get you through the evening. And, of course, Moran Monday is always open to your nominees. We've got nominees from the state of Missouri. We've got a group of nominees from the state of Florida. But I think there's really no way, and it grieves me to say so, there is no way to avoid noting that our first Moran nominee comes from, oh my God, Washington, D.C. I have a clip here from last December, kindly provided to me by Sandra. This is from the news conference in which President Not Sure announced that he was going to cave in and surrender on the issue of extending the Bush tax cuts. Yeah. Pretty damn tough to swallow. I'm not sure if you saw Paul Krugman's column from yesterday. It was called "The President Surrenders." Maura sent it along to me, and I appreciate that. It was a tough read. Not because, you know, my lips were moving because of all the big words as I read it. Just because sometimes reality itself is too damn much to stomach. And this was a big, ugly dose of it. Right in the face. Paul Krugman just dinged it. Nailed it. You know, it reminded me, our buddy David in Tennessee, who's, his native idiom is the Southern mindset, coupled with a nice smattering of football now that August is here, college football, that is. And he sent me along some thoughts, and it seemed to me that they were well worth sharing with you, because you might get this idiom too, especially if you live in the Midwest, you know, where the Big Ten is such a big deal. Yeah. I thought, you know, this might speak to you, because I think David in Tennessee has just nailed it. Subject line on the email said, "But God damn it, boy!" Every Southern male that suffered through football, or a footy got in the shower, or two a days in temperatures that had mules staying under shade trees, has heard it. Gasp, sputter, drag on a lucky, spit. "God damn it, boy, from looking at the film, I can't be sure you even tried to block air number 56 on that toss." David in Tennessee says, "I'm in that spot this morning." "Well, without the drag on the lucky. I'll take care of that for you, David." I am at that point this AM. All I can hear on either for-profit radio or NPR is Chinless Mitch sounding subtly proud and talking about a resolution. Something he can get his'n to vote for. What am I not hearing? I have not heard a word about that nasty little spruce-up word, revenues. Look, it ain't revenues. It's a slightly more fair tax level for the top 2-3% of Bushmerica. If some rich pig makes $1 million a year, we want him to make 940 large a year. Where is the hurt in that? We want non-paying GE, non-effing paying GE, no income tax paid GE to chip in. But no. These rabid, deranged bagger freaks, fueled by their corporate creators, have stopped the basic function of our government, mucked it up unmercifully. It's likely a cuts-only demand will be met by our Democrats with a smile. No revenues. Just a handing off of tax reform for another day. That and a Rube Goldberg legislative voting trick to let the Repiglicans vote down another debt ceiling increase just before 2012 ballot time so they can pin the debt ceiling tail on the Negro. Oh, hell yes, pin that tail on the all-too-black donkey in their White House. I just have not seen the kind of fight that Democrats should have waged. The apparent cowardice gags me. I am truthfully surprised both Teddy Kennedy and Tip O'Neill haven't come out of the ground to say firmly, "Well, what the hell, Barack?" I say again, God damn it, boy, from looking at the film, I can't be sure you even tried to block their number 56 on that toss. Yeah. Yeah. I ain't sure either. And I don't know what the hell Waterboy Harry Reid was doing.
Now listen. This just makes it perfect. This just makes it perfect. We're behind. They're all fired up. We got class. We're going to find it out. We got class, and I know we got it. And what we got to do? First place, our defense has got to go out there and take the ball. Our defense hasn't been taking the ball. Then when we get the ball, we got to have 11 people. 11 people that's just going to do their job, whatever it is. It's going to do their job and try to score every time you get the football. If we do that, we'll be all right. The offensive team that started, the same team started on offense, started except stable the quarterback. Okay, can we get together? All we need is just somebody who wants to do some leadership out there. There we go. Come on, Ed. Everybody's a leader.
I went and I found that after I read David's note. That is the legendary coach Paul W. Bryant in the locker room at halftime of a game in which his Alabama Crimson Tide was behind. Now, I don't care if you're a Bama fan or an Auburn fan or an Ohio State fan or a Michigan fan or, hell, even a Notre Dame fan. Did you hear those words? You know, he wasn't screaming obscenities. That is how you motivate people. That's motivational. Did you hear what he said? All we got to do is what we got to do. All we got to do is be perfect. We got to go out there and play some defense and take the ball away, and we got to try to score every time the offense has the ball. I'm sorry, you know, for those who, oh, goddamn, he's going to talk about some sports. This is not about sports. This is about, really, motivation. Did you hear the last line? All we need is somebody out there who wants to be some leadership. All we need out there is some leadership. Everybody be a leader. Where is that in the White House? Where is that in the soul of a man that we were told multiple times, you know, Harry Reid was a Golden Gloves boxer? What, did he get hit one time too many? Nobody want to lead? The only honesty I saw all day long yesterday came from Representative Emanuel Cleaver of Missouri. He looked at the deal that had been cobbled together, and in all honesty, he said, It's a sugar-coated Satan sandwich, and if I was a Republican, I'd be out dancing in the streets. I don't know what they wanted that they didn't get, but I know we didn't get nothing. All we need is somebody who wants to be a leader. Just need some leadership out there. Well, I said it grieved me to do it, but that I had a clip here for you. And I do. For our first Moran Monday nominee, I offer you the President of the United States of America. And that makes me halfway sick to do so. I take no joy in this. It is no pleasure to me. I have defended Barack Obama. I have been patient. I have listened to all the excuses and the apologists. Well, it's just that he's smarter than you, Bob. He's playing 11-dimensional chess. That's what he's doing. And, well, you know, he'd be a better president if he had a better Congress. It does take three to tango, the House, the Senate, and the President. But he had majorities in both houses and squandered them. Because he didn't want to lead. Really? I mean, I don't agree. I don't say this from any joyful place. But this man is no leader. And I don't think I'm alone in making that assertion. No, I've got a clip for you. Now just check this out. This is from December 7th, 2010. This is after the great surrender on tax cuts for the rich. Now we're gonna listen just a little bit, all right?
And that's why, you know, this goes to Chuck's question as well about what's gonna be different in the future. I mean, you've got a situation here that was urgent for millions of people. As I recall, with the Korea Free Trade Agreement, that was deemed by conventional wisdom as an example of us not getting something done. I remember a story above the fold on that. Then when we got it done with a better deal that has the endorsement of not only of the U.S. auto companies, but also of labor, the story was sort of below the fold. So I would just point that out. I am happy to be tested over the next several months about our ability to negotiate with Republicans.
Having bought that time now, do you hope to use this 2-year window to push for a broader overhaul of the tax code?
Yes. And the answer is yes. I mean, part of what I want to do is to essentially get the American people in a safe place so that we can then get the economy in a stable place. And then we're going to have a broad-based discussion across the country about our priorities. And I started doing that yesterday down in North Carolina. Here's going to be the long-term issue. We've had 2 years of emergency economic action on the banking industry, the auto industry, on unemployment insurance, on a whole range of issues, on state budgets. The situation is now stabilized, although for those folks who are out of work, it's still an emergency. So we've still got to focus short-term on job growth. But we've got to have a larger debate about how is this country going to win the economic competition of the 21st century? How are we going to make sure that we've got the best-trained workers in the world? There was just a study that came out today showing how we've slipped even further when it comes to math education and science education. So what are we doing to revamp our schools to make sure our kids can compete? What are we doing in terms of research and development to make sure that innovation is still taking place here in the United States of America? What are we doing about our infrastructure so that we have the best airports and the best roads and the best bridges? And how are we going to pay for all that at a time when we've got both short-term deficit problems, medium-term deficit problems, and long-term deficit problems. Now, that's going to be a big debate, and it's going to involve us sorting out what government functions are adding to our competitiveness and increasing opportunity and making sure that we're growing the economy, and which aspects of the government aren't helping. And then we've got to figure out how do we pay for that. And that's going to mean, you know, looking at the tax code and saying, you know, what's fair, what's efficient. And I don't think anybody thinks the tax code right now is fair or efficient. But we've got to make sure that we don't just paper over those problems by borrowing from China or Saudi Arabia. And
now, I want to be clear about this. I've played this long clip because I don't like being accused of taking something out of context. So you've heard a whole bunch of front end on this. A couple of minutes worth. Some of you are already running for the anti-emetics or just giving up and heading straight for the toilet bowl. The Simon Simple and Simon Pure qualities of this, or Simon Pure and Simon Simple, you know, it depends on. It's too much. It's just too much. It's as if he's operating in a universe different from the one that we actually have to live in, with rabid, racist, vile, hate-filled tea crackers and Klansmen and patriots and minute people and Republicans in general. It's like a bubble he's in. To this day, does he not understand that there is a significant segment of this population that hates his guts? And I ain't one of them. Does he not understand? So this is December 2010, and we're going to have a sober discussion with the American people. How'd that work out, Barack? Because I don't think the sober people were telling him to put the wood to the normal folks. Let's get back to this.
So that's going to be a major conversation. And in that context, I don't see how the Republicans win that argument. I don't know how they...
Really? I think this didn't go over too well anyway the first time. I don't know how Republicans are going to win that argument. Well, do you know how now, Barack? You know, they started out, we want our country back. And they've moved on from, we want our country back, to, Latin's taking all our money and spending it up. Look there at that big old deficit he's run up. And it's all his fault. George Bush never spent a penny of what he didn't pay back. Don't know how they're going to do that, Barack. We out here were telling you how they were going to do that, even as you were saying you didn't know how. But then again, I guess when you run around and you listen to the likes of Rahm Emanuel, I guess that's just how it's going to, that's how it's going to be. Sorry, Betsy, I can't raise his. I can't gain him up much more without things going completely sideways.
We're going to be able to argue that extending permanently these high-end tax cuts is going to be good for our economy, when to offset them we'd end up having to cut vital services for our kids, for our veterans, for our seniors. But I'm happy to listen to their arguments, and you know, I think the American people will benefit from that debate.
We've benefited all right. I was talking to a lady at a bank earlier today. She said the phone had been ringing just every few minutes from older Americans wanting to know had their Social Security gone in. That's a damn thing, ain't it? where we are in 2011. These godforsaken, shameless, motherless repiglickins have so well succeeded that they've got people convinced that they ain't getting it, that it's over. Just ain't gonna happen anymore. Nah, Granny, can't go to the doctor no more. We can't afford it. They got people believing that. Jesus. But there's a question coming up here, and if you're not fit to run around the room yet, this'll get your track shoes on.
And that's gonna be starting next year. Mark Amber.
Thank you. How do these negotiations affect negotiations or talks to Republicans about raising the debt limit? Because it would seem that they have a significant amount of leverage over the White House now going in. Was there ever any attempt by the White House to include the raising the debt limit as part of this package?
When you say that it would seem they'll have a significant amount of leverage over the White House, what do you mean?
What do you mean?
Like, we don't know.
That you know, they'll say essentially we're not going to raise the we're not going to agree to it unless the White House is able to or willing to agree to significant spending cuts across the board that probably go deeper and further than what you're willing to do.
Well,
what leverage would you have?
Look, here's my expectation, and I'll take John Boehner at his word.
Mistake one.
That nobody, Democrat or Republican, is willing to see the full faith and credit of the United States government collapse.
Guess you learned a hard lesson on that one, didn't you, Barack?
That would not be a good thing to happen. And so I think that there will be significant discussions about the debt limit vote. That's something that nobody ever likes to vote on.
Really? Nobody, Barack? It seems to me that the Congresses underneath Ronald Reagan didn't have much of a fit about it. They voted on it 17 times. Without a hitch. 7 times under George W. Bush. And not a lot of squealing there either. But by all means, continue your concession speech.
But once John Boehner is sworn in as a speaker, then he's going to have responsibilities to govern.
Woo! That's a good one. That's a real knee slapper, Barack. Wow, what a brutal place to... Wouldn't you hate to be Barack Obama and have to watch yourself saying this stuff 8 months ago? Wouldn't you feel just kind of like crawling under the table and sitting there huddled up in a little embarrassed fetal ball for a while?
You can't just stand on the sidelines and be a bomb thrower.
Yeah, they can, because they did. You fell for it.
So my expectation is that we will have tough negotiations around the budget, but that ultimately we can arrive at a position that is keeping the government open, keeping Social Security checks going out, keeping veterans services being provided, but at the same time is prudent when it comes to the taxpayer dollars.
Yeah, so how's that working out for you, Barack? Because it ain't doing diddly for me. David in Tennessee asking the pertinent question of the hour. Why didn't our side do the debt limit thingy in December of 2010? Sadly, I can tell you. Our side was so water-boweled over the repiglickins maybe screaming about the procedure, they tried to get both parties involved. The repiglickins did that going out the door bit a dozen times. We were too afraid of their megaphone to do it ourselves. So we cowed and were craving and we got clocked over the weekend. Utterly clocked. Glass jaw clocked. No, a lot of this isn't playing any too well. Our buddy John, writing in earlier today. Is it just me, or does the outline of this debt deal make it seem like President Not Sure is now advocating for most of what was in Boehner's bill, which he rejected? Though it's being reported that the extension will avoid another fight before the election, what's to say this congressional committee won't raise this issue all over again? And the complete abdication of tax increases for corporations and people who can pay really grates on me. I'm really angry how they let this build and build and build until the point that it becomes a legitimate crisis, which then gives cover to take drastic steps that give the Repiglicans basically everything they wanted. A balanced budget amendment? Really? And big kudos going out to John. Hopefully by the time we hear from him on Thursday, he will be Dr. John. He's defending his dissertation this week. And I'm sure the best hopes of all of the Horn family go out to him. He has worked very, very hard for all of this, and it's going to be something really special, and we'll all celebrate for him when it happens. Then again, Sandra noting, by the way, Bob, Obama voted against the debt ceiling in 2006. Maybe that's why he described it as being so odious. Sandra says his politics are real clear. Getting clearer by the minute, aren't they? Patty noting, Obama is getting and doing what he has always planned to do. He says, she sends me a link to the Washington Post that can't get to right now. But shortly before inauguration, well, Patty says, listen to it and watch it later, but kind of skim through the first few words at the beginning, and that might give us a sense for what we're dealing with. Ah, yeah, here we go. Yeah, headline, Friday, January 16th, 2009. President-elect Barack Obama pledged yesterday to shape a new Social Security and Medicare bargain with the American people, saying that the nation's long-term economic recovery cannot be attained unless the government finally gets control over its most costly entitlement programs. Hmm. How about that, Granny? You going to the doctor is what tanked the economy. How about that, Grandpa? You collecting what you paid in all your life, that's what sent the economy down the toilet. Not those greedy, the misshapen, misanthropic freaks on Wall Street. Oh, hell no, it was you, Granny and Grandpa. You done it. In the conservatory with the lead pipe. Jesus. Lord Almighty. So, yeah. It's frustrating to say the least. Still waiting to see how this deal is going to go down. I'm not sure. Is the debate over yet? I don't have C-SPAN on right now. The House debate. Urgent calls went out today from, among other people, Progressive Democrats of America, begging the Progressive Caucus to tank this thing. You know, that Representative Emanuel Cleaver referred to as a sugar-coated Satan sandwich. Somebody shoot me a note when the vote goes down. We're not there yet, I don't think. But just in case you're wondering where the hatchet would fall, interesting little analysis by Matt Iglesias over at thinkprogress.org. Matt writes, a majority of the deficit reduction in the plan being proposed to resolve the debt ceiling crisis is supposed to come from the recommendations of a special commission. Dear God, every time I hear there's been another a special commission formed, you know, just kind of want to hide my, hide. Not just my head, all of me. There's a trigger mechanism to create an incentive for the commission to write a proposal. And the trigger mechanism leads to automatic spending cuts. Now, some stuff is supposedly off limits. Half the cuts come from defense, and half come from the non-defense side, Iglesias notes. The sequestration mechanism, quote, would exempt Social Security, Medicaid, unemployment insurance, programs for low-income families, and civilian and military retirement. Any cuts to Medicare would be capped and limited to the provider side. Matt Iglesias cites calculations by Matt Cameron. What's left? Transportation, natural resources and environment, administration of justice, health, international affairs, another health that's discretionary. The previous one was mandatory. Total education, training, and employment programs, and then other. Sparky telling me the quorum call is going on in the House right now. Thank you, Sparky. Please keep me posted. So it looks like of the stuff that's on the chopping block, the stuff that's been reclined backwards over the altar to have its beating heart ripped out by a stone knife, education, training, and employment programs is going to take the biggest hit. Now, how are we going to win the 21st century doing that? Not much matter, does it? As long as the pig lickings are happy with it. God, this is a nasty business to tolerate. And I don't mind, I hope that, Jeebus, well, you'd a long time tuned away if you did mind. I don't mind criticizing Barack Obama when he's doing things that I think are obviously and odiously wrong. But, you know, one of the things that makes it so difficult to deal with this entire intractable, rotten-ass situation is the nature of the debate as it has been framed, characterized, and driven by the right wing. What do I mean? Well, I guess it was Friday when I got included in a picture on Facebook, you know, captioned, I suppose, or tagged or whatever, and it turned out to be an editorial cartoon. And it was put on a page of a progressive person who apparently wouldn't pee on Barack Obama to put out a fire. And it's an editorial cartoon that shows, and I realize we're talking about visuals here, so that means we're dancing about architecture again, but bear with me. I posted it on my Facebook page. If you go fishing around it back a couple of days, you'll find it there. I posted it on Twitter. It's an editorial cartoon by a guy named Mike Lester. And the editorial cartoon shows a covered wagon. And in the box of the covered wagon stands Barack Obama, mouth wide open, screaming, holding the reins in his right hand and wielding a whip with his left. the word balloon, absent the actual balloon, big black letters over the center of the frame says, "Compromise, damn it!" The reins lead out to a lone white man. No, really. A lone white man wearing a red shirt that says Working America. And Barack Obama has just cracked the whip in the back of the white man's head. Behind Barack Obama on this wagon is a gathering of people who have their baseball hats on backwards and have strange ethnic looking facial hair and bling hanging off their necks, and one woman scratching away at what may presumably be a lottery ticket. One fella has a little pork pie hat on. A bunch of them have their ball caps on backwards. One of the guys on top of the wagon has big lips, and what I have since been taught is a high top fade haircut and a big nose. Immediately to the right, to the left in the frame of Barack Obama is a man with his head shaved and his scalp's kind of wrinkly, and he's got big lips and a big nose. You get it yet? Do you understand? Barack Obama's driving a wagon filled with black folks who won't work because they're not part of Working America, while Barack Obama whips the poor white man who's trying to drag that wagon along. Compromise, damn it! And again, this panel was posted on a person's Facebook page who deems himself a progressive. I pointed these things out and was told later in an email that I was the racist for seeing these things. Well, I can't help but see this filth. My eyes opened in 1963 on an America that was absolutely shaken to its very core by the civil rights struggles taking place in that Alabama where my newborn eyes had just opened. I was born in an Alabama rocked by the words of Dr. King and the bombs of the Ku Klux Klan. I can see this filth. I can smell it. I can taste it. I can spot it from a mile away. And then the coup de grace. Hey, who drew this damn thing? Well, the signature inside of the panel, you'd be challenged to sort it out if you had the Rosetta Stone handy and your Captain Crunch secret decoder ring. But in normal print, Rome News Tribune. Well, I'm guessing if that was Rome, compromise, damn it, would be in Italian, don't you? And Barack wouldn't be driving no wagon train. He'd be whipping Spartacus, maybe. It's Rome, come on. Rome? Okay. Rome, New York. No, there's no Rome News Tribune in Rome, New York. No, this piece of unmitigated racist filth comes from the Rome News Tribune of Rome, Georgia. And the pen of an editorial cartoonist by the name of Mike Lester. Compromise, damn it! As Barack Obama whips the poor white man. And all the monochrome people scratch their lottery tickets and sit there with their bling hanging around their necks. Jesus, Mike Lester, why didn't you draw one of them eating some fried chicken and another one having a watermelon, you rotten bastard? Poor old working America white man being whooped by that one. But Sunshine, they're emboldened now. Oh, yes, indeed, they are emboldened. They're out of their little clan closet now. I offer as Exhibit 2, Representative Doug Lamborn, L-A-M-B-O-R-N, from, no, not Alabama, not Georgia, not Mississippi, not Tennessee, not Arkansas, not Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, North, South Carolina, or Kentucky, or old Virginia, but Representative Doug Lamborn from Colorado. Let's just let this thing speak for itself.
Even if some people say, well, the Republicans should have done this or they should have done that, they will hold the president responsible. Now, I don't want to even have to be associated with him. It's like touching a tar baby and you get it, you know, you're stuck and you're part of the problem now and you can't get away. I don't want that to happen to us, but if it does or not, he'll still get, properly so, the blame because his policies for 4 years will have failed the American people. Look at the economic numbers this morning.
Oh, there's no question.
Yeah, that's on a sickening little right-wing show called Capless and Silverman last Friday. Well, it's like, I don't even want to have to be associated with him. It's like touching a tar baby. Now, you know what? I want to be fair about this. In the work, well, there are some who have said that the works of Joel Chandler Harris bear a striking resemblance to the works of Aesop. And there's some truth. Now, they're written in dialect, and he was writing in an old racist South. But we all understand, just as we understand when Aesop told us the story of the fox and the grapes, I don't want them grapes anyhow. They're probably sour. This after spending a considerable period of time leaping at the grapes and not being able to reach them. So that over the course of millennia, it has come down to us as shorthand, sour grapes. And Joel Chandler Harris offered us some of that, too. Two words, briar patch. And like sour grapes, we know immediately what it means. Don't throw me in that old briar patch. Kill me, do anything you want to me. Just don't throw me in that old briar patch. It's a shorthand for a person who is being outwitted by virtue of thinking himself more crafty and cunning than he is. Because, of course, Brer Fox does throw Brer Rabbit in the briar patch. Briar patch. All kinds of neat little lessons about, and you know, there's an argument that some of those stories that Joel Chandler Harris actually collected from the Negro community where he was in Georgia, that some of those stories actually went all the way back to Africa. But not Tar Baby. Not Tar Baby. And not in the context of, and you heard it. You heard it.
People say, well, the Republicans should have done this, or they should have done that. They will hold the president responsible. Now, I don't want to even have to be associated with them. It's like touching a tar baby. And
I don't even want to be associated with him, meaning Obama. It's like touching a tar baby. Now, I don't like this word any more than you do, but the original tar baby story in Joel Chandler Harris was the you-know-what tar baby. And it's a story about self-righteousness and superciliousness and self-importance that has no relevance here whatsoever. I don't want to even have to be associated with him. It's like touching a tar baby. Now, I don't care how many times Doug Lamborn, a pig licking of Colorado, says he was taken out of context. You heard the context. And he referred to the President of the United States as a tar baby. And just like we know what sour grapes mean, and just like we know what briar patch means, we all know what word goes in front of tar baby. Now, don't we? I disagree with a whole host of Barack Obama's policies. But I don't disagree with him because of the color of his skin, but because of the lack of content in his character. But not these repig lickens. They feel that they have so thoroughly politically wounded him that they're just about down to where they can start using the words out in the open. But then again, consider the audience of a right-wing show like Kaplis and Silverman. Because no way would you say that if you thought you were being listened to by decent people. And bear in mind, I don't know anything about this radio show, but I'll warrant you it's terrestrial. And I will warrant you that it is listened to primarily by right-wingers. Otherwise, why would you even afford time to a miserable, sick, tea-cracker freak like Doug Lamborn? He is a bagger, isn't he? Let's see. Just for the heck of it. Let's see. John McCain's got busted using the phrase. Willard Romney has gotten busted using the phrase. The Oxford American Dictionary defines tar baby as a difficult problem that is only aggravated by attempts to solve it. As Time magazine noted, however, the term also has had racial implications. In his book, Coup, John Updike says of a white woman who prefers the company of black men, some questing chromosome within holds her sexually fast to the tar baby. The Oxford English Dictionary even had to add a subsequent definition saying, tar baby is a derogatory term for a black or a Maori. There is usage, and there is usage. And in this case, when you're saying Obama is like, it's like touching a tar baby. Now, I don't even want to have to be associated with him. It's like touching a tar baby. That is where you associate the man and the image. Well, damn, Congressman Lamborn, when you gonna refer to him as Sambo? Oh, there's all kinds of fun stuff that has absolutely got them itching to use. Final vote is underway in the House. So, now we wait. Now we wait. Now we wait. But by God, let's remember, when we criticize the man, we criticize the man. We criticize policy. We are not them. That's why I was so shocked to see a progressive adopting the racist ideology and the racist imagery inherent in that god-awful cartoon. Oh, and by the way, the white guy getting whipped, he's got a red shirt on. You know, red state. Yeah. So that's where Moran Monday begins. Your nominations, well, the phones are open for nominations. You know the number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. This is listener-supported radio. This is The Horn.
Done. They can't buy a job. Man, Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, this is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Danny Ira. Fox and Friends hosted author Tim Grossclose this morning to talk about alleged media bias in the aftermath of the Norway terrorist attack.
And you know what?
Predictably,
it's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't forget about the body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Danny Herrera. Fox and Friends hosted author Tim Grossclose this morning to talk about alleged media bias in the aftermath of the Norway terrorist attacks. Predictably, most of the interview entailed false assumptions about the political beliefs of journalists.
But Tim, what you're saying is, I'm trying to get to the bottom of it. You're saying that the reporters who are mostly Democratic are anti-Christian. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure. Anti-Christian is just, I've noticed this, you know, I work at a university and I live among the far left, and I've just noticed it's just not in vogue to be sympathetic to Christianity. I sense this on the far left. They're more sympathetic to Muslim, and I don't know why. The best explanation I've heard is a scholar out at Claremont University, his name's Larry Greenfield, says the left worship the God of equality.
For this story and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Past the hour, and we go into hour number two of this Moran Monday edition of The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. As noted, this is listener-supported radio, and we finished off July surprisingly near the actual fundraising mark. We almost got to, right at $1,900 on the month. In any given month, we try to raise $2,500. That's damned respectable in my, doggone it. Thank you very much. We can't have an August without July's fundraising. We can't have a September without August. So August begins now. We're not going to talk about holes or red ink or anything. We'll just try it all. We'll try it all over again this month. You know where the PayPal button is. Head on radionetwork.com under the tab contribute. Also there you will find the snail mail address. Okay? And that's all I'm going to say. Generally, we look for about 60 $60, $10 contributions a night or whatever it takes to make that up, some combination of folks. But in terms of the Thrifty 250, six. In other words, about 60, somewhere between 60 and $100 a night, and we can cover expenses for any given month. Jude, sending a note in. We'll go to the phones here just in a moment. Jude out in the Great Northwest. I'm listening to the horn outside, and there was an entire cloaking, I felt, with the blade-sharp comments referring to President Obama as Tar Baby. It was brought to a stunning height as I inadvertently stepped on a bee, and it delivered that piercing sting. Ouch! On every level for all of us. Even the universe rebels. Ron in Raleigh says, allow me. Bob, let me throw a crackback block on anyone that might accuse you of racism in regards to the president. I'm black and I find myself growing in discontent with our president's policies. I wish he would stop half-stepping and for once stand up for something or someone. Yeah, that one kind of blew me away too, Ron. Yeah, you're a racist for noticing that kind of thing. The voting should be closing, I think, fairly soon. The bill has passed the House. Apparently, Fox News made a big to-do of Gabby Giffords coming back to cast her vote in favor of this so-called compromise. You know, the people are getting compromised. Yeah, us. The bill, thank you, Sparky, the bill has passed the House. Onward to compromise! It got 269 votes, Clayton informing me. Jack writes in, he says, I overheard a conversation today that surprised me. I was out this afternoon running some errands. I stopped by a store that was not very large, intending to look for one specific item. Business was pretty slow. There were two salesmen. I changed my mind and decided to go ahead and browse for a while. The store being small and quiet, I could hear the two salesmen in conversation. It was mainly one man speaking to the other about politics, especially that surrounding the continuing debt ceiling disaster. You know the region of the country I live in, Shreveport, Louisiana. And so I was pleasantly surprised when I heard the word teabagger quite a few times and heard statements that I could have easily said myself. It was a nice change, and oh yeah, neither one of the guys was an old white man, just in case you or anyone else might be curious. Neither one. Some of this filth is generational. Truly. So, let's go to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Well, hey, Juanita.
I can't believe I'm the first one.
You are.
I had to hang up and eat some supper. I didn't know I was going to have it. I saw where over half of the Democrats voted against that.
But they still...
A little over half.
Well, then maybe it's worth finding out who those were.
Yeah. Well, I've got a person I would like to see be president.
Who's that?
Barbara Lee.
Oh, yeah.
I saw her a couple of times this weekend on TV, and, you know, just everything I've heard her say before, I think she would make a great president. And I'm so sad. I'm like you. It saddens me about Obama. But what can you say? You know who Harry Belafonte is, I'm sure.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Well, he's come out against Obama. He said he's extremely disappointed. And he was heavy into civil rights.
Oh, he's been an outspoken hero for civil rights for a generation.
Yeah. But I saw you were talking about the other day about some of the ministers going and praying. and getting thrown out by the Capitol Police. I don't know if they got arrested or not. They got thrown out by the Capitol Police.
Mm-hmm.
Before that had happened, I saw Jim Wallace. Do you remember him?
Oh, very much so. That's W-A-L-L-I-S, Wallace.
Yeah. And, yeah. Anyway, he...
Well, after all the previous talk, I just wanted to make sure that, no relation.
Yeah. But I've always liked him, everything I know anything about him. But he was being interviewed this weekend, and it's something that I've said before, and kind of, he said that they've had meetings with Barack Obama about how he's treating the poor people, very concerned, and they told him, Mr. President, that, and as much as you do it under one of the least of these, you've done it unto me. Oh, yeah, that's right. Obama said, oh, yeah, that's right. But, anyway.
Another hidden Juanita talent comes to the fore. You just did that perfectly.
Anyway, thank you. He said, they were saying, well, the people are watching and this and that. And Jim Wallace says, well, I know one thing, God is watching. And, these people that are in public life, and like that, I tell you, there's a story in the Book of Daniel that scares the tar out of me. Because I think about, oh my God, what a position to be in. When that king, they had all that big party and then the handwriting on the wall.
Oh, wasn't that Nebuchadnezzar? Yeah, wasn't that Nebuchadnezzar?
I don't know if it was him or not, but anyway.
Tekel Upharsin.
Something like that, yeah. And, it was like, Jesus said it's better to fall into the hands of the devil than the living God. The living God. And our country's, Bob, I don't know.
No, I've spent the day sort of with a sick feeling, I shared some of it with John earlier today, because he was sort
of chicken and villain.
Yeah, he was sort of in a bad place too, feeling kind of icky about all of this, and I told him I think it's. I feel like we, normal, decent Americans have been completely and thoroughly used.
Okay.
One of the things I heard early on was a White House spokesperson, Stephanie Cutter, I believe is her name.
Yeah.
And she said something on MSNBC along the lines of, let's see. Let me see if I can find it. I got it right here. Yeah, come on down. Yeah, she said that she hopes all sides have learned from this process. Well, as an old redneck boy, the first thing, when I heard her say what she hopes, and I'm sure you've heard this too, Juanita, and I won't fill in the blanks, but there's an old saying that says, hope in one hand and other one, and see which one fills up first.
Yeah.
And that's the first
thing.
She
said that to me many a time.
Yeah. And, she hopes that all sides have learned from this process.
Oh.
They're Republicans, Juanita.
We did a beach halt, didn't we?
Yeah, they're Republicans, Juanita. They learned. They've learned. They've been learning for a couple of years now. That if they push hard enough, he will cave. He will surrender.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sad to say, but that's right. But I want to say something. If you don't mind me, I know I've already talked about the Bible, but this is a song by Bette Midler that kept me hanging on, although sometimes by a thread, when I was going through something that Bette made me feel like I was going to implode from the inside out. And have you ever heard this song, From a Distance?
I don't think so.
May I read the words?
Y'all do.
From a distance, the world looks blue and green, and the snow-capped mountains white. From a distance, the ocean meets the stream, and the eagle takes to flight. From a distance, there's harmony, and it echoes through the land. It's the voice of hope, it's the voice of peace, it's the voice of every man. From a distance, we all have enough, and no one is in need. There are no guns, no bombs, and no disease, no hungry mouths to feed. From a distance, we are instruments, marching in a common band, playing songs of hope, playing songs of peace. They're the songs of every man. God is watching us. God is watching us. God is watching us from a distance. From a distance, you look like my friend, even though we are at war. From a distance, I just cannot comprehend what all this fighting is for. From a distance, there is harmony, and it echoes through the land. And it's the hope of hopes, it's the love of loves, it's the heart of every man. It's the hope of hopes, the love of loves. This is a song of every man. And God is watching us. God is watching us. God is watching us from a distance. Oh, God is watching us. God is watching us. God is watching us from a distance.
You know, Juanita, that reminds me of a story about Abraham Lincoln. And it may be apocryphal. They may all be. But someone was said to have asked Abraham Lincoln, well, President Lincoln, don't you think that God is on the side of the Union? And he turned to him, and the fellow, and said, sir, I am not nearly as concerned with whether God is on our side as whether we are on God's.
Right. That's right. And
you know what? You can't make the arguments that the right wing makes, that, you know, the way we got to right the economic ship of state is by you know, putting the, you know, making life harder for grannies and grandpas. You can't make those kind of arguments and say, well, you know what? We're on God's side in this one. Because, with the exception of the stuff about, you know, killing the men, the women, the children, the beasts of the field, things that walk, fly, crawl, swim, slither, whatever, with the exception of those rather disturbing passages in the Old Testament, just about everything, either the Old or the New, speaks to the need to care for one's elderly, to care for one's misfortunate, to care for those who don't have as much as others do. Almsgiving is huge. It is huge in the Quran. It is huge in every developed faith on the planet, and these Republicans are running headlong against it. I mean, I may run it at some point. I've got a clip here from some filthy right-wing organization that is throwing a 99th birthday party for Milton Friedman.
Oh, gosh.
You know, that monster.
Oh, they had something on this weekend, and I thought, well, who is this? And then I saw, who's the guy that likes to suck women's toes? And
David Frum?
The one that, I don't know why, but Clinton had as a...
Yeah, it's not Frum, I don't think. Somebody will tell me in a minute. Yeah, the toe sucker,
yeah.
But right.
I don't think it's David either, but anyway, it was the likes of him. They were having a big to-do on C-SPAN. It was some kind of a name, and you could take it either way, some kind of an organization that you could take either way. But, she's maybe 30 years old. She's supposed to be one of the heads of a Tea Party in her district or whatever. And where she brought up that thing about we didn't have a money problem, we have a spending problem.
Oh, God, that makes me run in the yard.
And you know what she said that really...
Oh, that was Dick Morris, by the way, Ron and Raleigh. Yeah,
yeah, Dick Morris, yeah.
Toe sucker Dick, yeah.
Yeah. It was the likes of him that was there. But anyway, this woman, she said, people were talking about working, you know, two or three jobs. And she said, you don't need to do that. All you need to do is cut back on spending.
Yeah, you know, on things like food and clean water and cut back on spending on gasoline. And
Yeah, and if you don't work, they don't satisfy with that.
You know, one of the things that's going to take a whack, I think, in this, if I read correctly, you know, food stamps. Now those things go to help poor people eat, but at the same time, they also go to prop up the retail grocery business. Like I said, you know, if they start doing this kind of stuff, all of a sudden there will be a call from Bentonville, Arkansas, to influential Republicans. Now, wait a minute, son. Wait a minute. You know, we talk all this talk about welfare, but that's just to get people out voting. We actually are the primary recipients of that there welfare, and we want it to keep coming, son. Walmart wants it to keep coming.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, Randall just wrote in. He said, the best version of the song From a Distance is by Nancy Griffith. Nancy Griffith. Okay. I will go. I'm intrigued by the lyric. I will go and have a listen.
Well, the song that I was referred to, I don't know if you'd call it that kind of a song. To me, it's inspiration. No.
No, well, she works that side of the street.
Inside of what?
I said she works that side of the street.
Oh, yeah, I can believe.
Yeah. So I will, now that I got somebody to pair it up with, I'll give it a listen after the show.
But, anyway, we've got some new laws down here. My son just had to spend almost $100 on tag. That's double what it was last year. And, you knew that Rick Scott did away with the, what is it they call the limitations on, not limitations, but whatever, when you check on things. Homeowners insurance.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And that's they're supposed to go up more. And, yeah, these people that they'll say, well, you know, of all of these people, most of these people, these so-called poor people, they don't pay income tax. Well, I'm going to tell you, Bob.
Yeah, because you know what? We never go to the gas pump either, and we never pay sales tax. And no, none of that.
But, you know, I could never understand them saying all that because the whole time that I worked, most of the time I made a little bit over minimum wage. And I always had to pay income tax.
Sure, and what's more, let's just get this out of the way real quick, Juanita. There's a simple answer to that. Well, the poor don't pay no taxes. The answer is because our income tax system is deemed to be progressive. Those who have the most pay more than those who have the least. And see, and you know, just see where it goes from there. Juanita, I got to run because we got them all stacked up, and I want to make sure everybody gets their chance.
Okay, well, remember, God is watching.
I will indeed, and I'm gonna go listen to that too. You take care, Juanita.
Okay.
We'll talk soon. Bye now.
Bye bye.
That was a heck of a good Barack Obama impression there. By the way, email just to share with you. A couple of things. Andy, out in California says, good Obama presidential press corps sound clip, Bob. This really shows how totally inept and incompetent Obama is. He's a rookie among seasoned veterans. To use another cliche, the Republicans are playing this rube better than a violin. It's hard to believe a man smart enough to be elected president can be so incompetent, but I believe he is just truly way, way over his head. He so underestimates how ruthless, how utterly psychopathic the Republicans can be. The ends are all that matters. It's just win, baby, win, and Republicans continue to deliver no matter how odious the means. And, you know, Andy, I don't know if that's incompetence or if that's just not being able to comprehend how ruthless these rotten, miserable, excrescent, the poor excuses for members of the human race are. If you haven't grown up around them, if you haven't dealt with them, you don't know what they're like. And a lot of us have dealt with that kind of meanness, but I don't think Barack Obama ever did. Or if he did, he was able to deal with it in, because he's never seen him get down and dirty. He doesn't understand the bloody nose. And they keep knocking the chip off his shoulder and keep knocking the chip. Knock it off. Knock it. And he backs up again. Oh, here's another. Knock it off. And he backs up some more. I think it has to do with an essentially non-confrontational mindset. Just to finish up an idea real quick. I mentioned that I told John that... I was pretty much bummed out all day today, and I told him, I said, I find myself contemplating the realities of a system in utter failure. This is no longer simple dysfunction in the United States. This is total organic system failure. And you might recall that John is our official Horn anthropology and archaeology consultant. And he said, you know, if it's a total system failure, what do you do? Complete hard reboot. What did the people of Chaco Canyon do when the climate changed and they got too big to sustain the system? Migration, dispersal, fragmentation, and evidence indicates warfare and cannibalism. We're also too big and complex for a reboot to happen easily or peacefully. On the one hand, a default would be catastrophic. On the other hand, this plan doesn't change the underlying problems, so we've delayed collapse. Great. And, you know, just to go with one other historic reference, the Byzantine Empire. And our good friend Eugene Finnerman, I wish I had Eugene handy right now to opine on some of this. The history of the Byzantine Empire is the history of decrease. And the effort to hang on to collapsing abilities and crumbling infrastructure. And every now and then an emperor would come along who would shore things up, but they could never get back to their essential greatness. And then in 1453, it finally just all fell apart. And that's what happens with massive system failure. You keep putting band-aids on until it all just comes crashing down because the great weight of everything is no longer supportable by band-aids. I didn't do that justice. Eugene Finnerman would. You know, and he's damn fun to read, too. Your RDA of Irony at Finnerman Works, Finnerman Works.com. Our blogger Texas Betsy noting, now that Tea Party Republicans have taken their ransom and left billionaires unscathed, let us turn to job creation. That's from Representative Hank Johnson. Will we? Not with John Boehner as Speaker of the House. David in Tennessee noting, on PBS, some pig freak from Kansas named Hustle Camp is calling the bill a failure because it overburdens our grandchildren. Representative Raul Grijalva of the Great Southwest said, I fear our president has abandoned most of the country. He needs to find the courage to be an advocate for us. So they didn't get enough, and we won't defend ourselves. as David often says in situations that ain't funny at all, this ain't funny, McGee. And it's not. It's just not. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Tracy.
Well, let's see. Where do we start?
Pick a place. None of them are fun.
I just... If I don't laugh, I start to cry. It's just, you know, maybe I'll start off with the, you know, the everybody being really upset that our President Obama isn't angry enough. Remember, I think we talked about this. It is not in his DNA to be the angry black guy. He was raised by a white woman, okay? And I don't know what his back, you know, I can't honestly say I don't know what his growing up was like. You know, he lived in Hawaii, he lived in Indonesia, and all that. So he's probably the only black kid on the block in all of his neighborhoods. But if you haven't been raised in a black neighborhood around black folks and know that anger of, you know, what it's like to, you know, to just be looked at crazy because you're black, like I said, I don't know if he ever has been, but I don't think he knows that kind of anger that a lot of black Americans have. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying. You know, it's hard for me to fathom him getting all, you know, ethnic on somebody, or in the vernacular, I said vernacular, ghetto. Because he's never been in the ghetto. I think Michelle would have a better chance of becoming getting angry black than Barack would. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think by...
Go ahead and say,
by definition of upbringing, I think you're right.
You know,
wait, Tracy, before you go any further, I don't know that this is dispositive of anything, but it does speak to. Do you remember? The world's longest primary campaign season, the primary campaign between Hillary and Barack?
Yeah, because I worked on that, you know, during that.
Do you remember when he went to Selma, Alabama?
Yeah.
Do you remember how he went from being Barack Obama, who was going to help us dig our way out of the ditch, to Barack Obama, who's going to help us dig our way out of the ditch?
Yeah, kind of like Hillary did the same thing.
They both did it. And as I just showed, I can be guilty of it too. Now take me back home or up some holler around here and give me a six pack and all that highfalutin theatrical speech training going away.
Gone, okay? I guess, you know, when people say, well, what do you mean you don't sound black? I'm like, no.
Well, wait a minute, because Ron in Raleigh said, wait a minute. He said, Bob, I've seen Barack get angry, but it's always at progressives and black folks.
Right. He don't get angry at the right people. Because, see, the thing is, here's where I feel sorry for our president. He can't get Samuel L. Jackson on these people. You know, because they already have this vision of the angry black man, okay? And they're scared as hell.
Yeah, and you know what? Barack Obama is not going to come out and say, I am tired of all these snakes on this airplane.
Okay.
He ain't going to do it.
He ain't going to do it. I mean, like I said, Barack Obama has the noble Negro syndrome, okay? He is Sidney Poitier in Lilies of the Field. You know, As a black man in this country, he has to walk a very high and very narrow and tight rope, okay? He has to make sure that he keeps the white people not too riled up, and then he has to keep the black people from getting too riled up. And the problem is, he's not pleasing anybody. Well, you're the one that says the only thing you got going down the middle of a road is a yellow stripe?
Yeah.
You have to pick a side. You know, you have to decide, okay, you know what, I'm Barack Obama.
Well, there's a reason that the middle is painted yellow. The middle is a cowardly place.
That's what I'm saying. You know, there's a verse in the Bible, basically.
Revelations. I would that ye were hot or cold,
or cold,
but ye are lukewarm. And because ye are lukewarm, I will spit thee out of my mouth.
Out of my mouth.
Ooh, testify.
Testify, Lord Jesus, help my soul. You know, you cannot.
See what I meant?
You know, either you're going to, Barack, Mr. President, either you're going to be a Republican, or you're going to be a Democrat. And not until the day that he talks about and says the word poor. Not working class, not, you know, unemployed.
Well, did you see that cartoon?
Yeah, with the whipping, the thing, yes.
Yeah, whipping the white man.
Yeah, I mean, have no problem with that.
Well, yeah.
I'm sorry.
I always count on you. but no, you know, right, because that's who was on that wagon. Did you notice?
I couldn't see because the picture was really small. So what was on the wagon? I didn't see.
Well, you know, it's a bunch of people with the hats on backwards, wearing bling. There's a high top fade, and they're all done in a sort of blue-gray monochrome. Now the white guy, he's in color, and the wagon's in color, and Barack's in color, and the whip's in color.
Well, it reminds me, like I said, about the whole angry black guy thing, and I was talking about one of my favorite movies, because I love westerns, not the John Wayne westerns, but the kind of revisionist westerns of the 80s and the early 90s, and one of them, my favorite, is Tombstone.
Oh, yeah.
And the part with Kurt Russell... Run, you cur!
Well, you know, no. See, I like that movie too, Tracy. But I just want to see Barack Obama look up one day at John Boehner and say, "I'm your Huckleberry."
I'm your Huckleberry. Yes. No. Tell him they want to, like he says. Tell him I'm coming and hell's coming with me.
Yeah, there you go.
And then he tells them, you know, "Run, you cur, and I'll kill every man with a red sash." I like that red sash part. You know, it's like.
But we're sitting here talking about how we wish a man would be who is incapable of being that way.
He is, like I said, I was talking, you know, when he stops quoting, you know, Reagan and Bush and all that and starts quoting FDR and Kennedy and stuff like that, when it comes to the policies to help the poor and needy in this country. Then I feel that there might be hope for this man.
And, you know, there are so many moments, Tracy, that are emblematic of that. I think of Bill McKibben of 350.org. I don't know if you're familiar with that organization.
No.
But, you know, 350 parts per million is the tipping point where everything on planet Earth starts going sideways, you know, in terms of,
right
like,
now?
Supporting life. Yeah, we're there. And so they diligently, after the inauguration of Barack Obama, they diligently went looking around for the solar panels that Ronald Reagan had removed from the White House roof.
Right, when Jimmy Carter was president.
Right. And they found them. And they got a meeting, and they were going to take them to the White House.
And it didn't happen.
Well, the meeting got sort of canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And they got shunted over to an office, sort of over out of the way. Because Barack Obama, who can quote Ronald Reagan till the cows come home, can't even stand to be in the same room with something that was associated with Jimmy Carter.
With Jimmy Carter, exactly. And Jimmy Carter called it how many years ago? About, you know, that tough love, man, tough love. About, you know, the energy crisis. I remember back in the day, you know, having to, you know, whatever the number was on your license plate, that's when you go buy gasoline. And,
yeah, oh, yeah.
And all this because there was a oil embargo and all that. But the thing is, Jimmy Carter saw the writing on the wall, what was that, 40 years ago? No, not.
Yeah, and tried to give us the grow-up speech.
Right, you know.
And the for-profit media turned around and said, "Oh, that was Jimmy Carter's malaise speech. See how depressed we are under him?"
Mm-hmm.
When, in fact, if he'd gotten four more years and we'd actually been able to start down that road, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in. We wouldn't be paying for any $3 and $4 a gallon gas.
Yeah, I just paid I paid $3.69 today for gas, and I was elated. How in the world should I be elated for paying $3.69 for a
gallon? Oddly enough, that's what it is here, too.
It boggles, you know, and when they blame President Obama for gas prices, I do, you know, he is not directly to blame, but he is indirectly to blame because, you know, he didn't fight hard enough about with these damn speculators. I cannot believe, I can't believe that almost up to 50% of the gas, of the price of gas is because of speculation. 50% of the gas price. So basically, we really should be paying really no more than $2 a gallon for gasoline.
Well, but what's more, I mean, it
Breathe.
It should be, taxes are an issue. But, you know, what it boils down to is we're standing back behind a blackjack table, or a roulette, actually, it's not even a blackjack table. It's more like a roulette wheel, while people who call themselves the commodities traders put their chips on the table. Red. Oh! Sorry, man,
okay, well,
I lost your money.
Yeah, I lost it. You know, I don't like people playing around with my life. If I want to play Russian roulette, if I want to get a gun and put a bullet in one bullet in the chamber and spin it, you know, that's on me. I made that choice. But I didn't give these... I'm trying really desperately not to cut.
I understand.
I'm trying. But I didn't give these motherfuckers the right...
Tried and failed.
I mean, I'm sorry. I did not give them the right to take that gun from me and spin the chamber and say, okay, Tracy, let's see.
No, and okay. Once more, to expand the metaphor, you didn't give them the right to take the gun and say, wait, Tracy, you ain't got enough bullets, honey.
Right.
Let's
put one in every chamber.
Yeah, David in Tennessee writing in, asking the seminal question, how long's it going to take? He says, the ugly right wing will hate him no matter what he does.
No matter what?
Barack Obama might as well make some good friends on our side and find his home. Because you know what? We're fun people.
We have fun. You know,
granted, fun. I can't make a canape worth beans. And I don't have any hummingbird tongue recipes. Or lark's vomit or anything like that those hedge fund managers eat.
Look, birds spit in their nest soup.
But you know what? I can't imagine anybody could be happy with anything, any happier with something. You know, maybe one of those shrimp tacos you get off the truck or a big bowl of red beans and rice and ice cold. Mercy.
Mercy.
Come on over, Barack.
You know, just come. You know, see, that's the problem. Barack didn't have enough soul food. Could you imagine now? Okay,
they never had no collards.
You know, not to be mean to white folk, and you know, I love all my white friends. I have two. But how much soul can a man have growing up on Velveeta and Spam sandwiches on Wonder Bread?
Now you don't know this about me, but I have a Velveeta problem. I just got my 3-year Velveeta chip the other day. Because it's the closest thing I can get to that government cheese. You know, it came
now,
in bricks. And,
well, see, I have something to say, too, about Velveeta. Now, I am famous in my family for my mac and cheese, okay?
Can't make it without it.
Cannot make, and I don't use a lot. And what I use...
No, just enough to creamy it up, and then you put the real good stuff on the top and let it get brown, melty, and
well,
crusty.
Actually, I make a cream sauce with the Velveeta.
That's what I do.
And I coat the macaroni with the because I make the cream sauce with the Velveeta, heavy whipping cream, and sour cream.
Tonight's food porn segment is brought to you by Kraft.
I get all my grated cheese and mix it in, and then I layer it like a casserole, and so you know, but.
Sounds so much like mine, it's spooky.
Isn't that scary? That's what we're going to have to do, a mac and cheese bake-off.
My children will crawl across ground glass My father thought it was the most wonderful stuff he'd ever had since they closed the cafeteria down in Alabama. Oh.
I love. So before I, so you know, oh, here's another thing about the Barack Obama black eye thing. So yesterday, on Friday, and I'm so upset that, I mean, I'm glad your son is okay, but I'm glad I just remembered this. So Friday, I'm coming, I came home, and I saw one of my neighbors who I thought was a reasonable person.
There you go thinking again.
There I go thinking again. So we got into this, you know, so I said, so how do you feel about, you know, losing 30% more of your IRA or your 401? And she's like, and so then we got into the discussion about Barack Obama. And, and within 2 minutes, I realized she did not vote for the man in 2008. She referred to him as an arrogant man. Now, Barack Obama is a lot of
get out your decoder ring from your Captain Crunch box.
Exactly. And I said, arrogant? She's like, yes, you know, it's just the way he talks to people. I said, you've had a personal conversation with the man, so you know that he's, in fact, arrogant? It's just his speeches. And I'm like, and see, this is what happens when you put people on point and put them on the spot when they have to confirm all the stuff that they say. And I'm like, really? What do you, tell me what you mean by arrogant? Because you know, I'm not a, at this point, I'm not a huge Obama fan right now. And it, she was relieved to hear that because you know, since I'm black, she automatically assumes I'm gonna vote for that. I voted for him. I'm
got a little shrine in the house and everything, right?
You know, but I told, and this is what, here's another thing when I tell white people, well, you just voted for him because he was black. And I'm like, and what if I did? Y'all been voting for white folks since, you know, since the beginning of time just because they were white. You know shit about their views, but he was a white guy, so you voted for him. So, you know, the difference between me voting for Barack Obama, I wasn't just because of the basis of him being black, but I thought.
Yeah, but see, and let's square up something, all right? You know, it's like David in Tennessee, who is white, has noted. It's like I, who am white, has noted, have noted. Ron in Raleigh, who is black, you, a number of other people, black and white and all the shades in between have noted. His skin color probably has less to do with how you and I perceive him. It has nothing to do with how I perceive him.
Nothing.
But it is impossible not to perceive how the right wing perceives him. And you know, the cartoons of, you know, him whipping a white man in a red shirt.
I have no problem with that.
Tar baby, you know, on and on and on. You know, I'm waiting for somebody to call him boy.
I'm waiting for
that's next. We're kind of counting down. It's you know, like Letterman from 10 to 1. And we're down about number 3 because we've gotten to tar baby. Boy is next.
Well, it's like, so when my neighbor said arrogant, I said, so you mean the uppity Negro? Oh, see, here's another thing that I love doing to white people, because my neighbor's white. I like to make them nervous, or just, it's not so much nervous, I want them to think before they speak. First we went to that one, then she was like, you know, I was saying something about you, because she's an actress, right? And I said, you know, because she was saying something about the unions and stuff. Oh, I said, wait a minute, aren't you in a union? You know, because you have to, in order to work out here,
you have to be
in SAG or what have you. Yeah, but I can't stand it. I'm like, hold on. Do you get medical benefits from that union? Yeah. I said, okay, so do you have a pension because of that union? Yeah. I said, now, because she has a regular job, too. I said, now, my question is, you've been working for however long you've been working in this company. Does your pension and this company match what you have in SAG? No. Does your medical benefits that you get from your company are as good as what you have through SAG? No. I said, okay. I'm like, because, you know, I want you to think about what you, you know, because I wasn't, and then, oh, here's my favorite, because she was talking about, you know, the tax, you know. She's like, well, you know, they're talking about raising taxes on the people who create jobs. They're like, who? She's like, the millionaires and stuff. I said, okay, so do you, I said, what job does What job has Paris Hilton created?
Bingo. And I want to share something with you, this coming from David in Tennessee. This has some significance. He just slugged the email for Tracy. He said, as a baby, I came home in 1944 to a caring white biological mom and dad. Mother had the instructions that I was on canned milk or hers till I was at least 4 months old. At 6 weeks, I would fill up on milk till I irped it up and would still cry out hungry. At that point, Mamie, our beloved maid, yes, a black woman, said, Miss Honey, that baby's just hungry. Y'all wait a minute. 5 minutes later, I was being spoon-fed cornbread and turnip greens pot liquor.
Oh.
I ate. I was burped. I slept through the night for the first time. Soul food matters.
It does. It's something about soul food that it's, when they say soul food, I mean...
It's survival food, Tracy.
It's
poor folks' food. I mean, I grew up on beans and cornbread. And you know, middle-class family, we didn't have to. But, you know, it was there at least once a week. And turnip greens, collard greens, kale greens, mustard greens. You know, because that stuff will lead you down the road to a long and healthy life.
Exactly. As long as you don't cook all the nutrients out of it.
Right. You know, a little bit of vinegar, or God knows for me, a little bit of hot sauce on the greens.
Hot sauce. Mm-mm-mm. Some little sweet pickle juice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Barbecue. Dill pickle juice goes into my barbecue sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When people think of soul food isn't just, you know, black food or whatever. Soul food is food from the soul. Even if you're Italian, it's lasagna. If you're Hispanic or Mexican or what have you, it's beans, rice, and tortillas. It's the food that gets you through.
It's the food that sustains your people.
That sustains your people. It's the food that keeps you, that you only have $2 to feed 10 people. But you do it. And this is the food that keeps you whole and keeps you alive.
And see, one of the reasons that I love watching Anthony Bourdain so much, Tracy, is because he covers that theme. I mean, he drills it into people. You know, he's been on this program twice, and you know, he'll say things like, you know, they send me to a lot of fancy restaurants, but if I get my druthers, I'm eating on the street.
Exactly.
You know, and you see it time after time in his program, because he said that, you know, the origins of great cooking lie in people making great things out of lesser things. Because, you know, the well-to-do, you know, there's a reason we say eating high on the hog.
Yes.
Because, you know what, the poor folks got the trotters.
The
poor folks got the ribs. The poor folks got the neck bones.
And
made delicious. And you know, sausages were a means of preparing and preserving meats. And they were made out of god-awful cuts.
You don't want to, if you ever want to eat sausage, don't ever watch it being made.
Oh, I have made it. And it's an ugly process, but boy, is it yummy.
I mean,
you should have said, Ferg was tickled pink. We've got a sort of a little patron saint. German deli over in Baltimore called Binkert's, and they make these awesome artisanal old school German sausages, and you can order blood sausage from them.
Now, I've heard of blood sausage,
and it is,
I just don't know if I could do it.
You could. It is wonderful. It's wonderful. And you know, because it's got all kinds of spices in it and stuff, and anybody who's in a hardcore Italian family, ask them about Sunday gravy, and they will begin to wax poetic and rhapsodic, because again, it was a matter of making stuff be yummy out of stuff that didn't appear to be yummy.
I'm telling you, some of the stuff that my mom would come up with back when we had. You know, when we had to use food stamps to eat, which, because, you know what I like about this show and the fact and everything that has been going on? Two things. My vocabulary is improving dramatically. because I now know what capitulate means. Unfortunately, the words that I'm learning are disheartening to me. You know, but you know, the thing is also I'm doing my own little research for when, you know, when people start, you know, talk about entitlement programs and how we need to get rid of them. For example, you know, I Googled food stamps and the economy. So basically, for every $1 in food stamps spent, it produces almost up to $2 in economic activity.
Yeah, because somebody at the grocery store has got a job.
Mm-hmm.
The retailer gets some. Yeah. The middleman gets some. The farmer gets some.
And like I was reading today, well, yesterday in the Sunday Times about the horrible cuts that have been coming, you know, because through, you know, the quote-unquote entitlement program, this one lady who is paraplegic, paralyzed from the neck down, and she has in-home health care that is being cut. So those are two jobs because she had two home health care
right.
workers.
Yeah, those are jobs. I mean, and
two jobs.
Yeah, this
right
pie
there.
Chart that I'm looking at that talks about what is going to be eligible for cutting on the domestic side. Well, let's see. We're going to cut into the transportation budget because, you know, our roads are too good and our airways are too safe. We're going to cut into the natural resources and environment because, well, you know, the air's all clean and the water's all clean and there's no poisons leaching into children's drinking water in southern West Virginia. Screw that. Administration of Justice?
Who needs that?
Both mandatory and discretionary health programs. International affairs, you know what? Yeah, I mean, let's just retreat into our little, into our little womb-like the nation state and pretend that the rest of the world doesn't exist.
We are.
And then the one I love though is total education, training, and employment programs, because you know what? We're already doing too much to edumacate people. We're doing yes. too much to make sure that people can be trained to what? Win the battle of the 21st century or whatever President Not Sure said. And we're doing way too much to help those daggum 99ers who won't pick themselves up by their own bootstraps and go out there and find them some work in the miracle service economy.
Well, see,
that's what's going to get cut, Tracy.
We can't, you know, because I think I sent out a tweet yesterday about, you know, along the lines of, you know, about our president constantly quoting, you know, Bush and Reagan and all that, and not quoting FDR. And I'm like, the next thing we're going to hear is that, well, as Americans, we need to pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps. Only problem is, if you cut my money, how the frick am I supposed to buy a pair of boots to pull myself up from?
Well, there you go. No, I'm waiting now for quotes from Hoover and Coolidge, and then the
yeah.
trifecta will be completed. Hey, Tracy, I got to run, dear. So we can hit all these other blinking lights, but as usual, it's wonderful.
Awesome, as usual.
All right. You take care, dear.
You always. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Tracy calling from California and onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm here. How about you?
So-so. I was thinking about that cartoon, and with a couple of edits, it actually would be correct. If in the wagon behind Obama you had Boehner and Cantor and the teabagging crowd.
And a bunch of those guys dressed up like the dude from Monopoly.
Right. And instead of the white working man, it's just working class. And that's, you got it right there. That's the actual thing that happened. And contrary to what many people are saying, I don't think Obama has strayed from his roots. He's a bloody DLCer. He's surrounded himself with DLCers, and he's doing exactly what Wall Street paid him to do.
Well,
he got more in contributions from Wall Street than that idiot, what's his name? The Mad Bomber.
Oh, McCain?
McCain.
Yeah. Because I don't know, maybe Wall Street's prescient, Cossack. Maybe they knew that that he would, maybe, you know, maybe there's a secret handshake or a high sign or something, you know. They knew he'd do their bidding.
Exactly. Oh, he was vetted. when it came down to a race between him and Hillary, I had lost all hope because they were both DLCers at heart. It at that point it really didn't matter one way or the other.
And you know there is a legitimate conversation that needs to take place in the so-called progressive community or the left or whatever it is we're calling ourselves today or tomorrow, and that is why can we not get our message out to the rule one, or you know the rhinoceros in the room is you know the for-profit media. You know, Dennis Kucinich runs for president, and some babblehead from the for-profit media says boxers are briefs, or says
right.
Mr. Obama, what would you do about Iraq? Mrs. Clinton, how would you handle the tanking economy? Representative Kucinich, is it true that you saw a UFO?
Right. Or how did you get such a hot wife?
Jesus. And so, I mean, that's problem one. But problem two is, I don't know, maybe it's the herding butterflies kind of problem that we can't all get on the same page. Because, you know, as long as you've got folks out there reprinting racist cartoons to shore up their Obama hate, we got a problem. Now, that's not to say that he hasn't done things, and, I mean, Jesus, you listen to the program. God, you've been with us since God was a baby. You know, there's no end of criticism for him. But, you know, when you are so strident, I mean, I can't tell you the things that got said to me on this thread. You know, I was told that I was a fool, that I was carrying water for the mainstream media. You know, it kind of makes me want to go through my Facebook page, and if you're not listening to the horn, you need to move on. Because it was obvious I was dealing with people who had no idea who or what I, you know, it's not one of those, do you know what I am? No, but I was dealing with people who had no idea what I stand for and where I come from.
Right.
You know, I'm just asking for honest criticism, not criticism that is backed up by a cartoon that could have been drawn by a Klansman.
Exactly. And, I mean, the thing is, I mean, first of all, it's like Roald Grijalva already said that he was going to vote for this atrocity. And that's what it is. It's an atrocity.
Now, yeah.
Especially this thing with the Super Congress.
No, that makes me scream. That makes me absolutely beside myself, stupid, crazy.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. You know, take the power of the purse strings out of the hands of Congress, so they can't really debate it. You know, and if we're going to start making cuts, let's make it three quarters of the military budget, and one quarter in discretionary spending. But even so, you know what they're going to be cutting, among other things? The hurricane chasers.
Yeah, because who needs them? And I'm sure there's an earthquake center that needs to be closed.
Yeah.
You know, we've got inspectors for the FAA who are working for free right now, Cossack, because these lifeless pricks in the Republican House can't get their together enough to get a funding bill through simply because the people who work there are unionized.
Yeah. We can't have that.
You know, why is it that if I want to see somebody really give a grilling to a right winger, I got to tune into Russian TV, for Christ's sakes?
Yeah.
You know, I was over at Crooks and Liars earlier today, and our buddy John Amato had a post there of an RTV anchor just asking straightforward, honest, journalistic questions of Pam Geller.
Oh, God.
You know, that oh, I don't know what to call her. And making it abundantly clear what a filthy, godforsaken racist that hateful harpy is.
Oh, she is. She...
But Jesus, Cossack! Cossack, how is it that this manages to come up with you on the line? Jesus, Cossack, it's Russian TV!
Yeah. They're doing far better journalism.
God forbid George Snuffleupagus should ask some Republican a hard question.
Yeah.
You know, I guess David Gregory can't ask any Republicans hard questions because then maybe he won't get invited to do an MC Rove bit at the next time the Republicans are in power and some thug-ass operative needs a sidekick. Jesus, those are obvious problems.
Yeah. If you ever read Drift Class.
Oh, yeah.
He does not have a particularly high opinion of Gregory.
Who would? Oh, and by the way, I got an update in, Cossack. You know how a little bit ago I mentioned that I guess we were up to number two now on the what will the right wing finally break down and call Barack Obama list?
Yeah.
And I said we're up to boy.
Uh-huh.
Well, Michael in Sebastopol wrote in and said, sorry, Bob, been there. Done that. He said, Representative Jeff Davis, Repiglick in Kentucky, April 14th, 2008. I'm going to, speaking at a GOP dinner, direct quote, I'm going to be telling you something. That boy's finger does not need to be on the button. So I guess we're up to number one, and it's just a matter of time before some... Wait a minute! Well, no, not directly, but... I was going to say Dr. Laura, you know, because she had her 5-minute rant using that word.
Oh, yeah.
But she didn't use it directly in regard to Barack Obama. So, no, I guess we're still just waiting for one of them to just... And it is. Cossack, when it happens, it's going to be like somebody has been slain in the spirit in a holy roller meeting and got two snakes and got a snake in one hand and a glass of cyanide in the strychnine in the other and just start... Oh, Jesus, help me, he's up. And it's going to be all over.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've had some luck this evening. I've been... retweeted by a number of people over my my little tweet. I said, first an editorial cartoon shows Obama whipping a white man, now a Colorado Repiglick and calls the president a tar baby, and then my closing remarks, march mighty Klansmen, because that's what they are. They're Klansmen.
I mean,
God,
the thing is, and by the way, I'm kind of annoyed about the misuse of tar baby. I mean, I remember the original Uncle Remus story about that. You know,
well, the story itself does go back to the African mythology and storytelling. Just about everything Joel Chandler Harris did.
Yeah.
But you know, no, he wasn't using that phrase in the way that you would ordinarily. But you just don't even use it anymore.
No.
Because it had that word in front of it, and that word is still in front of it, even if it... I mean, it's like, I don't know, it's like one of those French words where you don't say the last four letters, but they're still there. Well, these six letters are still in front of tar baby, and even if they're not pronounced, they are still there. I mean, anybody who's ever learned a little... Nespa, in... apostrophe EST-CE pa, and it's Nespa.
Yeah.
Well, tar baby is the same thing. It just isn't pronounced, but everybody knows it's there.
Right.
Oh, God, they make me crazy, Cossack. And by the way, Sandra just sent an email. She said, Super Congress, think Yeltsin's Duma.
Exactly.
And with all due respect, I don't want to go there.
No. And the thing is...
I mean, how do you create one of those without a constitutional amendment in the first place? Because the Constitution has legislative branch, executive branch, judicial branch, Articles 1, 2, and 3.
Correct. And the legislative branch meant all of the legislature. They're supposed to decide on the budget. It's not easy. And you're supposed to have some give and take. Of course, teabaggers don't know what the meaning of the word is, and they would like to see the entire government crash and burn. You know, let's just stop the government spending altogether. And how long would it be before Washington, Maryland, and Virginia dried up and blew away because they depend on the government for the source of their livelihood. You know.
Yeah.
The economies of those three states would be completely ruined. And New Mexico. Oddly enough.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, we're going to cut transportation because the roads are too safe and the infrastructure is too sound and the airspace is entirely too competent.
Did you see Inspector America on History Channel?
I've seen it a couple of times, and it's a very disturbing program.
Yeah.
It's one of those that I had, you know, I don't watch the shows. Watch as we go into this KFC and count the rats. I don't watch those programs either.
No. But it's terrifying when he says, "Oh yeah, this is concrete," and he starts pulling it out by the handful. This is a bridge.
Hey, watch this rebar crumble in my hands.
Yeah.
You know, and it's supposed to be iron.
And you know, this is the problem. We can't seem to get it through our heads, or people have somehow forgotten it. That without government, you don't have infrastructure development. I had a very unpleasant discussion a few days ago with a guy who was ranting and raving about it. He's been a good Republican for 60 years, and Bachman would be a good president. I'm just, you know, I'm sitting here having conniptions. He says, that one, look, don't make me do this. I don't like Obama for a variety of reasons, but you're making me defend him. Now pointed down the road and I said, you see that brick they just finished building right down the road? Oh, they've been talking about, talking about it for years. And they didn't have the money until the stimulus package went through, you idiot. If it hadn't been for that, the bridge wouldn't have been built. We still would have been creeping across a two-lane bridge that was threatening.
I guess, you know, I guess when these dumbass baggers talking about wanting their country back, I guess they want crumbling two-lane bridges.
Yeah.
Life was simpler and slower then when you ran the chance of going through the middle of the Homer J. Noodleman Memorial Bridge there as the concrete crumbled. It was a simpler time in America, and now that one's come along and took away our hole in the bridge heritage. Jesus.
Yeah, they talk about how he's just spending money hand over fist, and I said, well, first of all, the bank bailout was spent by Bush, not Obama. That was Bush's doing. And like I said, if it wasn't for the stimulus package, this bridge wouldn't have been built, along with many other bridges and roadways and so forth. And as if we don't need to upgrade our infrastructure, as if we don't need to upgrade our airports, you know, we kind of need these things. Unless you want to go back to horse and buggy, literally.
Yeah.
You know, the economy kind of tends to crumble if you don't.
You know, that does. That drives me. It was a simpler time when we had horses and buggies.
Yeah, and horse shit everywhere. And place stank like hell. And that's why you had, like, in the old the old Rocky and Bullwinkle. You remember them?
No.
And they had the March of Time, and they had the guy at the end of the line with the DSC on the can following up the elephants.
Right.
That's what we had to do back then. Do you want to go back there?
And all kinds of fun stuff grows in that, too.
Oh, yeah.
It is, of course, the dinner hour. So naturally, we're talking about this. Cossack, it's good to hear from you, brother.
Good to have you. I'm glad to hear Ferg is okay.
He is. He may be feeling a little rough as soon as he gets better and I, you know, have a little alone time with him. I don't want the boy. But it is one of those Jed Clampett moments. You know the Jed Clampett moment, right,
yeah.
Kelsey?
Jethro.
One of these days, I got to have a long talk with that boy.
Yep.
Because you know what? The short talks aren't working. Cossack, have a good night, brother.
You too, Bob.
Bye.
Take
now.
Care. Bye-bye.
From North Florida, behind the corn pone curtain, like so many of our listeners, that's the Cossack. And by the way, just stay right where you are. Don't go nowhere. I shared Michael's observation. That boy don't got no business with his finger on the button. Yeah, because you do. Oh, stupid. It hurts. Hey, welcome to the program.
You know, it amazes. I found this whole thing over the weekend so fascinating, as everything gets cut, and to watch the political machinations, it's fascinating, because did you get that letter I sent you? It totally didn't make a lot of sense about the back. This is Gene, by the way.
Pardon?
Did you get the letter I sent you?
Yes.
About the back. I realize it probably didn't make a lot of sense, but, you know, I just, when I was looking at it, it was so, it's so bizarre, because no one in their right mind would want to think of joining the Republican Party. No one would want to do that. And yet, after this thing was, I mean, they would have taken the blame, but Barack had to step up and kind of, oh yeah, we'll take it. It's like, oh man, you didn't really want that 2012 job, did you? Do you really want to be a one-termer? I mean, it bothers me, because this thing is, they do such a number on the idea of our government, you know, a representative government. It's like, if you're a liberal now, you're going to just have to go out and go do the third party thing, like you've always said, and it'll take 20 years. I think it's going to take 40 to build a really decent party if we go third party. But on the other hand,
but even assuming the accuracy of that, Gene, it's time doesn't matter if there isn't some serious money behind it. You know, the reason that I'm going to try not to just take up a whole bunch of time at this, but Friday evening, or maybe it was Saturday, I think it was Saturday, I sat down and I watched the entirety of the progressive convocation or progressive panel that took place out in Seattle a couple of weeks ago that Malloy was on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it was Mike Papantonio and Dennis Kucinich and Randy Rhodes and Stephanie Miller and of course Malloy. Fact of the matter is, I probably wouldn't have watched it if Malloy hadn't been on it.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a discussion in that whole thing. I don't know if you've seen it or not. I mean, it's worth it. It's good. But there were a couple of moments where I was just, because some comment was made, and it wasn't made by Malloy, because he would never say something like this, I don't think, about how the teabaggers were a grassroots movement. And I was about ready to kick furniture, Gene. Because there would be no teabagger movement if, A, Barack Obama was not black,
mm-hmm.
and, B, it had not been funded to the umpteenth million by outfits like Americans for Prosperity.
And, I don't disagree with you.
And you know, I mean, you know what Americans for Prosperity just did, right?
I'm afraid to ask, but go ahead.
Up in Wisconsin, they mailed out absentee ballots to Democratic voters that contained deliberately the wrong election date.
Of course they did. But you see, my point of it is, what I find so fascinating about this is somehow it's like the business part of the Republicans said that, you know, looked around and looked at the future and said, oh, God, we're going to get screwed. How are we going to get, like, find our way around this? And I honestly feel like somebody hitting on the egg. Ah, here we go. We'll let the wingnuts have our party and avoid, in order to avoid having to do the real work of building an actual grassroots movement, which, given our political philosophies, this isn't going to happen. We'll go ahead and we'll take over the Democrats instead. And when we get ourselves firmly ensconced, we'll just let these teabaggers go, but we'll keep them around in the meantime just to scare any real Democrat away, or not away, but into voting for us until we don't need them anymore. See, that's my point. I'm feeling like, gee, that's what I'm seeing when I look at this. It feels like they've managed to cut what would have been a 40 to 60 year process, if at all, on a Republican side, into 12 years by taking it over at the top.
Yeah, but I, and frankly, taking it over at the top, I don't know that. I don't think Democrats could ever do that. But let's be honest. I don't think a third party could ever do it either.
I guess this is
a good time to remind people that America will never have a viable third party. Because the minute that the third party becomes viable, it will become the second party, and the second party will go die.
Well, I don't disagree with you.
Third parties are not workable. I'm not saying they're unconstitutional. That's not it at all. Third parties are not workable under the present scheme as it presently exists. That's not to say I don't like them.
I just want a
little reality in the discussion would be really, really helpful. And that is, that what I mean by that is the fact that there has never been and never will be a viable third party electing candidates in this country because of the way elections are structured. Now, if you had instant runoff voting like they've got in Australia, maybe. If you took the filthy money out of our electoral process and made all elections publicly funded, maybe. But not as the system presently stands. And I think it was Malloy who said this up in Seattle. The people with all the money who are in office now are not going to vote to take all the money away.
It's just irrational to think that. There's nothing you said I don't disagree with. But what, I mean, I really feel at this point, after seeing what I've seen, I mean, the only other option then would be for progressives to go in there and actually, and doing what you probably think needs to be done, which is actually to go through there and, face the DLC Dems.
There's absolutely that, Gene. But by the same token, we also need progressives whose egos are tiny enough that will let them run for county commission, that will let them, and run in primaries. You know, instead of spending all this time saying, let's primary Barack Obama, you know, which even if somebody did it would suck away a bunch of money that could be very useful in county commission races, in mayoral candidate races, in state legislative races. You know what? Let's start. Well, I go back to Howard Dean, Gene. Oop, didn't mean to rhyme. Let's get earnest, seriously earnest about getting down south and funding candidates who will stand up on the stump and say, listen, it ain't your fault. These people sold you a line of bill of goods. They told you it would work. They told you it would work. You gave them chance after chance after chance after chance. It didn't work. It ain't ever going to work. Now let's try something different, because we are not so dumb that we're going to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. Let's try something different.
I don't disagree with you.
You know, frankly, the Republican Party's a dead thing, Gene. But
I don't,
it would not.
I don't disagree. I don't think I. I'm not saying that we should go there, because it's like they're dead. There's nobody in their right mind would ever vote for Republican again.
Yeah, but you know what? If you're talking about Tennessee, Arkansas, Alabama, Louisiana, Georgia, Mississippi, Texas, Oklahoma, North, South Carolina, Florida, Kentucky, and you know what? It wouldn't necessarily be a bad idea if some honest-to-God, progressive-minded people registered as Republicans and started creating a debate inside that party.
Well, maybe, you know, you might be right.
Because you know what, it can't be any crazier than progressive people posting racist editorial cartoons to prove that Obama is a bad person. Can't be any more crazy than that.
That's for sure. Okay, all right. I just that was what was in that. It fascinates me because I'm looking at all this and the politics. Like, boy, you did such a number. That we can't use even the institutions that were put there to even come back at all. It's like we always have, we either have to go through and build it completely from scratch all over again, which is what I think they want us to do, or something else. But, you know.
Well, yeah, and it's like Sandra just said. She said, first past the post voting systems are incompatible with viable third parties.
Yeah.
And that's much more succinct and eloquently said than anything I could have. Absolutely.
Okay,
but that doesn't mean that, you know, we go along to get along. I mean, David in Tennessee just sent along the vote totals out of the big house vote this evening. Out of the Republican majority, it was 174 yay to 56 nay. 56 teabagging horses' rear ends voted no. Because, you know, there's no votes and there's no votes, Gene. In this case, the no votes on the Republican side were people who didn't think that bill was hateful enough. Okay? That's different from a no vote on the Democratic side. Among the Democrats, 95 Democrats sided with the Republicans and voted yes. 95 voted no. Those 95 voted no, not because they thought the bill wasn't hateful enough, but because they thought the bill was too hateful. Like I said, there's two different kinds of no votes operating there.
Yeah, I know.
So
anyway, I'll let you go.
Well, it's
I just go ahead.
No, you please.
No, but I just had to call in because it's like this has been bugging me all weekend because it's like, man, to watch this is just, it's painful. But it's painful, but it's also fascinating. It's like, geez, now how are you gonna let that? How are you gonna let the axe fall just so? So anyway, you have a good night.
All right, you too, Gene. Good talking to you, my friend. Bye now.
Bye bye.
News Ninja Gene calling from out in Oregon. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yes, hello?
Yes, hello.
Hi there. I'm Keith from Astoria, Queens.
Oh, great to hear from you.
Yeah, no, I've been a long-time listener, first-time caller. I really enjoy the show. It's given me sanity at times.
Well, you know what? What you give, you get in return, because I get it back from you guys in double measure.
But I tell you, the last weekend has been rough. I mean,
hadn't it?
2 years has been rough, but the last weekend has been like, what is this country coming to? I mean, I'm just sitting here like.
No, you really feel like you're watching something fall apart, don't you?
Or something like I feel like I'm living in Weimar Germany. At times, you know, like, it's like, it's just bizarre. I mean, I live in New York City, I guess I'm middle class, which is to say, you know, like, by the time we pay our rent and my kid goes to private school because the public school, he has a learning disability and that's the only way he's going to learn something is put him in a small Lutheran school with 7-8, you know, kids in a class.
Right.
You know, but by the time we pay everything, we have nothing left. And, you know, if you would ask Dalton 10 years ago or 20 years ago, I'm a nurse, my wife's a social worker, we make $140,000, $50,000 a year, we're broke at the end of the month. It's crazy. You know, by the, you're always paying back taxes. You can't own anything in New York because everything costs $8 million. So you're always renting these apartments, half of which are like falling apart. And if you wanted to know what an average New Yorker pays for his apartment that's falling apart, it's scary. You know, we're talking like $1,500 worth of rent. You know, there are times I just wonder where we're all going. I mean, it's bad. I work in an AIDS care facility. We have had 8 sets of budget cuts in 2.5 years. I mean, it's like I'm waiting to find out, like, what's left to my staff. I'm one of the clinical administrative supervisors there. I've worked in AIDS care for 25 years, and I have really seen the healthcare system of this country fall apart. It's scary.
Let me say this first and foremost. For those who believe in an afterlife, somebody up there is polishing your halo. There's no doubt about it. Because to be in that care sector for that long, and still be at it is, well, I hope you won't be embarrassed when I say that it's heroic in nature, and you have, I'm sure, the thanks of a multitude of families, and you have the admiration of the Horn family into the bargain.
Thank you very much, but what you guys do is real important, too, because I don't think people like me could do what we do if we didn't have something like you to listen to at times. You know, you really do at times. A lot of times I listen to you off hours because I'll get in the mornings or something when I can catch the rebroadcast, but it's just much of what you share and stuff is just wonderful. It's just really been, it's just a pleasure to talk to you. But I don't know what's next. I mean, in terms of politically in this country.
Will you forgive me if I jump on you there for a minute and tell you what's next? Because I've got what's next right here.
Okay.
It comes from Chinless Mitch the Turtle McConnell.
Okay.
Now remember, I played that clip at the beginning of the show of Barack Obama back in December saying, well, and I certainly hope we will all grow up and deal with this as adults when the time comes. And the Republicans were sitting there snickering up their sleeves at the time going, oh, man, no, really, did he say that? Oh, this is going to be fun. And so we've just seen it. You know, we've seen it twice. We saw it over
We saw it with the Bush tax cuts.
Yeah, the Bush tax cuts, you know. Then the government shutdown, now the debt ceiling, and they've set up a thing. And I can't believe there's anybody out there simple enough. I mean, you know, you come from New York, man. I mean, this is the home of three-card Monty. You know, two or three hands, and you realize that you're in a, you know, you ain't never going to find that queen.
Well, believe me, I realized that one a long time ago. One of the reasons I do the work I do is because I came to the conclusion at a certain age, like 25 years ago, at least I'd get up in the morning and do something like I could live with myself with. You know, I went to a place called Stuyvesant High School. I had 2 college degrees. I could have become a lawyer or a stockbroker. I didn't. I became a nurse because I guess I wanted to help people and care for people, and I enjoy my work very much. I hope it's...
You know, I remember this just goes to show you the power that educators have on you. I remember sixth grade. I had a sixth grade teacher who made every member of our class, she made every class she ever had, memorize a poem. And this particular poem began, I have to live with myself, and so I want to be fit for myself to know. And that kind of has echoed down the decades. You have to be able to stand you before the world can. I understand what you're saying completely.
But on the other hand, sometimes the world makes it really hard because it's like, you know, there are times like, you know, you sit there thinking to yourself, like, I mean, I'm really afraid, you know, we have one of the longest freestanding AIDS care facilities in the country. Which I'll mention the name of. It's by Phil Rivington House. It's on 45 Rivington Street in, you know, Manhattan. We've worked from the very start, basically, with substance abusers, with HIV, people with psychiatric disease, people who basically come to us because there's no place left to go. You know, it was like the homeless shelter or Rivington House. And luckily, if they end up at Rivington House, they get AIDS meds, they get psychological treatment, they get all these good things. But it's like I've watched my staff get cut down to nothing. We just have the medical staff. How is a doctor supposed... I mean, it's getting crazier and crazier. When St. Vincent's folded, I thought I was...
Oh.
God.
And, you know, and you know,
hospital was like an institution in, it was like Charity Hospital in New Orleans. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. Well, you know, Saint, you know, and there are
those places.
Yeah, there are those places, and there are those, and I, you know, you've heard, I talk from time to time about little signposts on the way to where we're going. You know, there's the guy that the fire department watched his house burn down in Tennessee.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. Yeah,
there's the closing of St. Vincent's. You know, there's because these are things that that give us a brief microcosmic glimpse into how badly things have gone wrong. But you said, you know, where are we going next? You know, and we start, okay, there was December, there was the government shutdown, now we've done this. Well, I've got a quote here from Mitch McConnell, okay? This is where we go next. A reporter earlier today asked him with regard to the deal, you know, for his thoughts. Well, not a reporter, really. It was Neil Cavuto on Radio Rwanda, okay, Fox.
Okay, yeah, no, so that's not a reporter. That's
no, that's a hack.
Wall Street's man on Fox. Okay.
our man in Murdoch. McConnell says of the deal, it set the template for the future. In the future, Neil, no president in the near future, maybe in the distant future, is going to be able to get the debt ceiling increased without a reignition of the same discussion of how do we cut spending and get America headed in the right direction. I expect the next president, whoever that is going to be asking us to raise the debt ceiling again in 2013, and here's the walk away phrase, so we'll be doing it all over again.
Oh, I'm sure they will, unless we get someone with the balls to, like, pull off the 14th Amendment, which I was hoping would happen, but, of course, that's not going to happen with Mr. Obama. And the sad thing is I voted for Barack Obama. I like Barack Obama. There's something that tells me he is a good and decent man, but he's like, but, you know, I remember saying to all my progressive friends, you know, he's a conservative Democrat. You know, he talks a good talk. You know, he walks a good walk. But the moment push comes to shove, you know, part of me thinks we might have been better off with Hillary. Because I think Hillary might have actually fought.
No, it would have been the bits and pieces.
But she would have at least fought for a certain.
It would have been the same story with a different skin tone. They would have hated her for being a woman. And instead of tar baby jokes and
it would have been
PMS jokes and oh my God, you know, how can we trust her to have her finger on the button? You know, she might be menopausal or Jesus God, she'll have a hot flash and no, I mean it's because the Republican Party operates with a core set of values, all of which are centered around this filthy little knot of just malodorous hatred. And so, don't trouble yourself with that. Don't second guess. You know, we had a choice, Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. And both of them are DLC Democrats, and I think a bunch of us went into it with our eyes wide open. You know, from my standpoint, you know, I just recognize that we are an empire and we are behaving like one. And it's hard not to look at ancient history and look at the Byzantines and the Athenians and the Romans and go, well, you know, we've been to this movie before.
I do love your ancient history speeches, by the way. My son is actually in like fifth grade, and we did, you know, like Greece and Rome this year, and you know the Sumerians and all this stuff in his social studies class, and you know, and I kept telling him, I said, you know, study the Roman Empire, okay? Not only is our government in some ways based upon it, you know. We are basically the modern-day Rome, so understand it, you know. Understand all those, you know, because all of the same themes are playing out now, played out back then. But the sad thing is a lot of kids, I mean, the New York City public school doesn't even really teach half this stuff anymore.
No.
You know, it's like, it's dangerous to teach kids history, you know.
And remember, the stuff that goes on the chopping block, you know, the biggest chunk of it is education.
Oh, yeah. Well, the education goes on the chopping block. We have an art program in the Queens Lutheran School because I teach it. I don't get paid to teach it. And, I mean, I give these kids an art program that's second to none. I mean, they show their artwork at Rivington House. They show their artwork in coffee shops around. And the artwork they do is good enough to get into galleries and stuff.
Jesus, you have no, oh my God, you have no idea the lives you may be changing.
And I've also, I have to say, I am able to at least give them a perspective on Christianity. I mean, I took them to Rivington House this year. We did a show in Rivington House with their abstract art. And I gave them a bunch of statements about Jesus. But the statements I gave them were things like, when God chose to come to earth, he chose to come as a poor man. You know, Jesus, when he was doing his acts, owned nothing but, a seamless garment and the shoes on his feet. He was a homeless preacher. All these facts that, of course, most Americans forget about Jesus. I said to them, okay, you're getting a Christian education, and they do give them one with a soft C, I would call it. We actually teach things like evolution and science.
Right.
Because, you can believe in God and still believe in science. They're not antithetical.
And that's why the fundamentalists drive me nuts, because in many ways, it is their position, their literalistic interpretive position is an insult to the people that they hold up as avatars of their faith. To expect Jesus to know that the earth was round, he had a better chance of it than a few people a few centuries later.
What gets me more than anything else is when I look at these right-wing churches and stuff, I'm like, did they ever read the Bible?
No, they don't.
Because I was raised Roman Catholic. So
no, they don't read it. They just
the Bible until I left the Roman Catholic Church and went to college.
I can't tell you how many people from the Catholic Church have told me that. Oh, we don't read the Bible.
Oh yeah, because you don't have to read the Bible. They give you the catechism because they want you to understand what they want you to understand. Then I read the Bible and I was like, whoa. The Old Testament was some of the best pornography and graphic violence I've ever read in my life. But the New Testament was incredible. I mean, it was like, it's basically a long speech on socialism. Do for the poor.
Right. Well, and when you get around to St. Paul, and he says, talking about the early church, and they held all things in common, they what? Wouldn't you call that communism? Oops.
One of the things I often tell my kids is, I always tell my son, when we pass homeless people on the street, remember two things. One, Jesus was homeless. And remember also, if God ever brings Jesus back, do you think he's going to come back on a white horse? I don't think so.
He's not. No.
He's a crack addict sitting in a corner, and because you turned your back on him, the Savior will never come again. So always keep that in mind when you deal with the homeless, when you deal with the poor, And basically what I teach my kids in their art class at times, it's kind of interesting. If you invoke Martin Luther King and Jesus, you can teach we had a whole teaching 3 years ago about the war in Iraq. And the way I did it was we did this wall on signs of the time of our decade, but we transposed it against Rauschenberg's signs of the time, the artist Robert Rauschenberg.
Right, right.
And the picture of Kennedy and King in his coffin and Janis Joplin and such. And the one thing that seemed to squeak through with both of them was Martin Luther King. So, golden moment to teach kids. We basically did a teaching based on Martin Luther King speech at opposing the Vietnam War at Riverside Church.
Right.
I explained to them, I made them listen to the speech. And then we talked about all the commonalities. And I had kids who never shut up in class and stuff who were like glued. I had parents explain this and everything, but I was ready. If any parent came in and said, "How dare you teach my children the way and stuff," I was going to be like, "I was just talking about Martin Luther King and Jesus. What can you say to me about that?"
Right.
It just amazes me at times, though, how many Christians or people who call themselves Christians. My wife is very much an atheist. She's a product of a roving Catholic who didn't want to be a Roman Catholic anymore, which I would say a cultural Jew. And she was adopted. So, she was raised in sort of both faiths with no faith. And I have to get my kids in a Lutheran school simply because I like the class, I said to people, you know, he'd be the Madras if there was a 1-to-7 teaching ratio in the neighborhood in the Madras. I wouldn't really care. I'm concerned that he gets a decent education. And unfortunately, the New York City Public School did a great job of testing him and a very bad job of providing any services to him. So, you know, without you at least going in there and doing things I didn't want to do. So, you know, and then I was given alternatives like, oh, you can hold him out for a year or two and then the state will pay. You know, I'm like, oh, you're crazy, you know. But anyway, but no, it's just, you know, I just sit and wonder at times where this country is going to. I have to say, you know, my parents really believed I would have a better life, and I did. I got the college education they never had. I got the, my son will go to college, one way or the other. I mean, I've already taught him to chant, you know, SUNY and CUNY because there is no uni, but, you know, he'll go to college and such, but I don't know if he'll ever have the life we have, which kind of scares me.
That's terrifying for me too, especially as I watch one daughter approach 18, another one, my son approach 16, and my youngest approach 15. It's terrifying. Well, I'm so very glad you called in this evening, and please don't be a stranger, okay?
Oh no, not at all, and thank you so very much. Thank you for what you do. Please keep doing it, and I'll call back again, and I'll certainly keep listening. And hello to everyone out there. I mean, it really is almost like a family.
It is.
As I said at times, keeping me somewhat sane. So take care of yourself, and thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
Wow. First-time caller. See? Got through just fine. Anybody can do this. This is mind-blowing for me. From New York to L.A., commentary out of Tennessee, Louisiana, upstate New York, Northern California, Florida. Wow. And you think, and you, no, I'm the one who gets inspired here. If our betters and the Lobster for Lunch crowd could hear this, they would be scared runny bowled. Not because we're mean, not because we're violent, but because we're here and we're awake and we're paying attention. Yeah. Hey, welcome to the program.
And we're not going away, Bob.
And we are not going away.
I don't know, Bob, every time I listen to speak, thing you say is already in my heart. If you have a little more clarification with language and some other knowledges that I appreciate, we all thank you for the work that you do. And we all are concerned about our children and our children's future. Maybe not so bright. I'm a fan of Chalmers Johnson's comment. You can be an empire or you can be a republic, but you can't be both. You know, I've agreed listening to Bob. I left Ocala tonight. I'm over here at Crystal River. I pre-staged myself. Like I learned in the Marine Corps before you make your final attack to work, but, any case, I listen to you a lot, Bob, and I agree with a lot of the comments about Obama. I will vote for him. I think I agree with you on the third party observation. I would say that over the weekend I called WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 active radio. It's a neat station on Sunday. They let people like us communicate for a few minutes, and then that's about it. But in any case, the host of the show, very sharp cookie, and his take on what we're experiencing, and I'm not defending it, but he something about his comment was that he thinks that Obama's strategy is because I agree with Harry Reid's cuts to the military, and I guess there's a split between Reid and Obama on that to some degree, but he made a clarification that he thinks Obama's kind of doing a rope-a-dope, waiting to, he's pre-staging himself for the Bush tax cuts to expire. And I mean, does that seem even plausible to you, Bob?
Mark, gosh, I want to say yes so badly that I can scarcely comprehend it. But even Ali, you know, the great Muhammad Ali, the inventor of rope-a-dope, did not spend the whole fight in the corner. He did come out and fight. The idea of rope-a-dope is to let somebody punch themselves out, and then once you know that they're tired and you start seeing those gloves fall down a little bit, you come in and beat the tar out of them. I mean, is that your understanding?
That's the way I saw it. I think I watched all of his fights. I always liked Ali. I didn't dislike
him. I don't see that, because one, the Republican Party, because of a variety of factors, not the least of which are money and media, will never punch themselves out. Because among other things, they treat in the shop of fear and ignorance and hatred. And those things are potent weapons, and they also understand percentages, Mark, and that is that they don't have to have 50%, they've just got to have enough to screw the pooch, okay? The number of teabaggers they have is more than adequate to their needs. And so, you know, with that, you know, how many times McConnell, Boehner, Cantor, well, you know, the American people don't want the American people, blah, 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 the American people. And it made me stand, you know, damn you speaking in my name. Because I am the American people, and I, by God, do want. And, you know, the numbers, they said this, Mark, with numbers that didn't even support them, and they still the American people, because in their world, Mark, the only American people are the damn teabaggers, and the rest of us can go hang. So I really appreciate the analogy, but I don't think Barack Obama is a boxer. If you were going to use any sporting analogy, I think you would say that he is a jiu-jitsu or one of those martial arts practitioners who uses the strengths of his opponents against them. But the thing is, sooner or later, you have to flip somebody. You got to throw somebody on the mat, and he has never, ever, ever done it, Mark.
I haven't seen it yet either, Bob. Bob, I didn't necessarily agree with that, but I did. I definitely wanted to get your take on that. And Sunday I went to a laundromat because I didn't want to make noise, so washing clothes, getting ready for the week in the household. So in the laundromat was a guy just a little bit younger than me, and he had Caucasian, pretty good shape, and he had some tattoos, and we just greeted each other, just saying hello. You know, just how you doing? And he looked pretty squared away. And then I got my stuff going. Then I looked over at him. I go, well, just out of the blue, the TV's running in the laundromat. There's nobody there. It's a quiet Sunday. I said, whose fault do you think it is? And he said, what's that? And I said, well, who do you blame all this on? And he said, what are you talking about? I said, well, you haven't been watching the news for the last 2 years. The economy tanking. And he goes, oh yeah, Yeah, definitely, I have been. Well, do you think rich people did this or poor people? And I had to repeat that again. And he finally said, it's poor people's fault, Bob. And I said, so you're blaming this on people? I said, are you a veteran? He said, yeah. And I said, he was U.S. Army. I said, what'd you do in the Army? He said, artillery. And I said, well, I spent 11 years in the Marines. I guess I don't know nothing. Anyway, he goes, well, I don't really discuss politics. I said, well, maybe we should, but that's all right. I'll leave you alone. So I'm like yourself. I was running out of the house with my hair on fire, and I walked out to my truck, and I came back in a few minutes later. I said, could I ask you a question that's not really political at all? I said, just a mathematics question. And he said, sure. And I said, I don't want to offend you. You know, I'm a pretty good-sized guy, Bob. I'm pretty healthy. I don't look real mean in the face, but I'm pretty stout. And I said, how many million dollars do you have to be a billionaire? And it took him a while to come up with an answer, and he said, 100 million. And I said, well, you were real close. You missed it by 900 million. And I said, that would make you a Tea Party person. So I can understand why you blame poor people. So sorry about that. You know, so they don't know, Bob. They don't know. And that's what I hit people with. I hit people with that a lot. I say, how many million does it take to be a billionaire? There's people I work with, Bob, at this nuclear power plant, my fellow tradesmen and women. They don't know. And we're really in tough shape. We have 1,100 billionaires in the world. 430 of them are right here in the United States. Just finished watching, I'll get out of your hair because I know you got to go, but I just finished watching Eduardo Galeano's kind of a spokesman in the documentary called Eyes Democracy Now. And that's where we're going to end up. They're trying to break the economy on purpose. The other state that Kozak couldn't remember was South Carolina, New Mexico, because of all the heavy government stuff out there for research. And five states would immediately gone broke. And what the idea is with the Koch brothers pushing this agenda is so they can run in and make these General Electric cities. Corporatization, privatization is their agenda.
Well, if y'all can't afford to run them, we'll be happy to take them off your hands. Oh, that makes more sense than I care to admit, Mark. It's awful good to hear from you, brother. You take care.
Semper Fi.
Bye now.
Bye, Bob. Bye.
Mark calling from Florida, and my apologies to the other four blinking lights. It gets a little hectic and a little busy around here. We will have at it. We will have at it again tomorrow evening. I'll be right here. Hope you will be, too. Thanks to everybody who makes all this go. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next, only on The Horn.